Hello, friends. This is Fred Dominguez. In World War II, our country fought on two major fronts. In Europe, we fought a conventional land war against the Germans. Battles were fought in places that could be easily found on any map of the time, even though the names of those places were previously unknown to most Americans. Today, virtually any tourist with a road map can find the locales in which the European battles were fought. In the Pacific theater, however, the war was fought across the vast and trackless ocean and on many of the islands that dot it. There were no road maps to guide our forces as they met the Japanese on land and sea and in the air, and no such maps exist today. Most of the islands on which battles occurred still have the same names that they did then, but many of them are not easily accessible, even today. The location of the many sea battles of that Great War are even more difficult to identify. In some cases, the general location can be determined because of the names that have been given to these parts of the Pacific Ocean. But even in these cases, the precise locations of the battles remain elusive because they can only be determined by points of latitude and longitude that are indistinguishable to the layman on the surface of the sea. When we investigate ancient battles, some of the same issues complicate our searches. Place names and political designations have changed over the centuries. Even in places where ruins exist, it cannot easily be determined if these sites correspond to the conflicts in question. This is particularly true in the case of the battle that took place between the God of the Hebrews and the Egyptians at a place called the Red Sea. For a few moments today, we will survey what the scriptures tell us about this great battle and also consider the results of recent archaeological expeditions, which may help us zero in on where this epic confrontation occurred. In Exodus chapters 7 through 12, the scriptures record the 10 plagues that God brought down on the land of Egypt. These plagues devastated that great nation and ultimately convinced Pharaoh to let the people of Israel go. The culmination of these plagues was the death of the firstborn in Egypt. In Exodus chapter 12, verses 29 through 34, the scripture says this: "Now it came about at midnight that the Lord struck all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sat on his throne, to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of cattle. Pharaoh arose in the night, he and all his servants and all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was no home where there was not someone dead. Then he called for Moses and Aaron at night and said, 'Rise up, get out from among my people, both you and the sons of Israel, and go, worship the Lord as you have said. Take both your flocks and your herds as you have said, and go, and bless me also.' The Egyptians urged the people to send them out of the land in haste, for they said, 'We will all be dead.' So the people took their dough before it was leavened, with their kneading bowls bound up in the clothes on their shoulders." With Egypt brought to its knees, the people of Israel departed the land of oppression. In Exodus chapter 12, verses 40 and 41, the scriptures make this poignant observation: "Now the time that the sons of Israel lived in Egypt was 430 years, and at the end of 430 years, to the very day, all the hosts of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt." At the time of their entrance into Egypt, some 400 years earlier, the people of Israel had numbered only about 75 men, women, and children. Now, as God led them out of Egypt, Exodus chapter 12, verse 37, tells us that they numbered about 600,000 men on foot, aside from children. Now, God had promised Abraham that he would make a great nation out of him, and the 400 years in Egypt had multiplied Abraham's descendants into just that. They were a huge body of people, perhaps as many as 1 to 2 million when counting for all the women and children in their number. Having been freed from Egyptian bondage, they were beginning their journey to the promised land. Here is where we begin to have difficulty in determining where the people of Israel went as they left Egypt. In Exodus chapter 12, verse 37, the scripture says that they went from Ramesses to Succoth. Their starting point was Ramesses, which is in the eastern portion of the Nile River Delta. The city of Succoth was about 40 miles to the south and east, near the Egyptian frontier with Sinai. In Exodus chapter 13, verses 17 and 18, the scripture says, "Now when Pharaoh had let the people go, God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, even though it was near. For God said the people might change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. Hence God led the people around by the way of the wilderness to the Red Sea, and the sons of Israel went up in martial array from the land of Egypt." Now the reference here to the way of the land of the Philistines is to the road that passed along the coast of the Mediterranean Sea and went directly into the region that we know today as Gaza. This would have been the most direct route to the land of Canaan, which was the land God had promised to give to Abraham's descendants. Because of the presence of the Philistines in this region, however, God chose instead to take his people through the wilderness. This, then, is the setting for the great confrontation that occurred at the Red Sea. It is important to notice at the outset that the Battle of the Red Sea need not have occurred. After God brought the final plague on Egypt, Pharaoh agreed to let Israel go. If Pharaoh had left it at that, none of what we are about to discuss would ever have happened. Pharaoh, however, was a hard-hearted man, and God used his hardness of heart to glorify himself before the people. In Exodus chapter 14, verses 5 through 9, the scripture tells us of Pharaoh's change of heart that led to his defeat at the Red Sea. The scripture says, "When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, Pharaoh and his servants had a change of heart toward the people, and they said, 'What is this we have done, that we have let Israel go from serving us?' So he made his chariot ready and took his people with him, and he took 600 select chariots and all the other chariots of Egypt with officers over all of them. The Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he chased after the sons of Israel as the sons of Israel were going out boldly. Then the Egyptians chased after them with all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh, his horsemen and his army, and they overtook them, camping by the sea beside Pi-Hahiroth in front of Baal-Zephon." Now God had anticipated this action by Pharaoh and had, in fact, purposely led Israel to this location. In Exodus chapter 14, verses 1 through 4, the scripture says, "Now the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, 'Tell the sons of Israel to turn back and camp before Pi-Hahiroth, between Migdol and the sea. You shall camp in front of Baal-Zephon, opposite it, by the sea. For Pharaoh will say of the sons of Israel, they are wandering aimlessly in the land. The wilderness has shut them in. Thus I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will chase after them, and I will be honored through Pharaoh and all his army, and the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord.' And they did so." With Israel camped by the sea, and Pharaoh and his army in hot pursuit, the people of Israel were understandably afraid. In Exodus 14, verses 10 through 12, they complained to Moses about their predicament. Moses' answer in verses 13 and 14 is some of the most powerful words in all of the Old Testament. The scripture says, "But Moses said to the people, 'Do not fear. Stand by and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you have seen today, you will never see them again forever. The Lord will fight for you while you keep silent.'" With these words, the battle was engaged. God instructed Moses to raise his staff over the waters of the Red Sea so the sea would be divided and the people of Israel could go through the sea on dry ground. In Exodus 14, verses 21 through 30, the record of this confrontation unfolds for us. Moses did as God commanded, and God sent a strong east wind to sweep the sea back. It stood up as a wall on their right hand and on their left, and the people of Israel passed through it on dry ground to the other side. When Pharaoh's army saw Israel passing through the Red Sea, they plunged in after them. The text tells us that God looked down upon the Egyptians and threw them into confusion. He caused their chariot wheels to swerve and made them difficult to drive. At this point, the Egyptians realized that God was fighting against them, and they tried to make their escape. As the Egyptians attempted to retreat from the Red Sea, God instructed Moses to raise his staff over the sea once more. When Moses did so, the sea collapsed on the Egyptians. Verse 28 says that not one of them remained. And verse 30 says that Israel saw the dead Egyptians on the seashore. In verse 31, the scripture tells us that when Israel saw what God had done to the Egyptians, they feared the Lord and believed in the Lord and in his servant Moses. The battle turned out to be a one-sided affair. The Egyptians never had a chance. They did not realize until it was too late that it is not wise to oppose God. Now this brings us to the most intriguing part of this account. What we want to know is, where did this all take place? The maps in our Bibles usually give only a general reference to where the Red Sea crossing occurred, and theories abound as to its location. Some skeptics have taken the view that the Red Sea was not a sea at all, but merely a swampy marshland in which the Egyptian chariots bogged down, thus giving Israel the opportunity to escape. These skeptics further suggest that the story about the Egyptians perishing in the sea was a later embellishment of what actually occurred. Others have suggested other equally fantastic theories, including one that says Israel actually crossed on the eastern side of Sinai into what is now Saudi Arabia. However, recent archaeological expeditions by Dr. James K. Hoffmeyer from Wheaton College in Illinois may have discovered the actual site of the Red Sea. An important factor that most commentators have overlooked is that the geography of this region is not the same today as it was at the time of the Exodus. The coastline of the Mediterranean was much farther south than it is today. Also, the body of water that we now call the Red Sea stretched farther north at that time than it does today. Additional archaeological evidence shows that a series of lakes existed on the eastern border of Egypt at that time. These lakes have long since been swallowed up by the desert. As a result, Dr. Hoffmeyer suggests that the Red Sea crossing took place at a location about 60 kilometers from the coastline of the Mediterranean Sea and slightly west of the modern Suez Canal. The body of water that existed there at the time of the Exodus is now known as Lake Timsah and was perhaps as much as 20 meters deep and several miles long. At the time of the Exodus, it would have been sufficiently deep to have drowned Pharaoh's army. Dr. Hoffmeyer's expeditions were conducted in order to find archaeological evidence to support the Exodus account. His discoveries, although not universally accepted, demonstrate that the account of the Red Sea crossing is not a fabrication, nor is it an embellishment of an ancient oral tradition in order to create a more glorious victory for Israel. Like so many of the Old Testament accounts, when the archaeological evidence is unearthed, it supports the biblical record. As we ponder the Battle of the Red Sea, what lessons might we draw from it? Well, the most important lesson is that it is futile to fight against God. Egypt, at the time of the Exodus, was one of the most powerful nations on earth. When their fight with God was done, they were left in ruins. Egypt was never again a major power in the world. The Council of Gamaliel in Acts chapter 5, verses 39, still rings true today. But if it is of God, you will not be able to overthrow them, or else you may even be found fighting against God. A second lesson we may learn from this event is that God will take care of his people. Israel was afraid of Pharaoh and his army. There was no way that they could defeat him, but they didn't realize that they didn't need to defeat Pharaoh because God was going to fight for them. This is still the case today. God is fighting for us against our most important enemy, who is Satan. In fact, God has already defeated him by raising his son Jesus Christ from the dead. For this reason, we need to believe in God and in his word and commit ourselves to doing his will every day. If we obey God, he will bring us to the ultimate promised land, which is heaven, where his son is preparing a place for us to live with him in eternity. Thanks very much for listening today. Please join us again next time for Let the Bible Speak.